see.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're sitting in traffic. Maybe you're in that commute just trying to get a little respite from the bumper in front of you. Well, we got a few bumpers for you. We're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Thank you, patrons. You're the best. Our patrons make it possible for this show to exist. And in exchange, they get cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, a whole bunch of bonus content for their perusal and listening pleasure, including multiple seasons of Feeling This with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer. We've got the Wednesday paid DLC program with Lana Bashinsky and Christian Spicer and myself talking about all sorts of fun patron input that we get all through the week. A prompt goes up. Oh, it's all interactive. It's all fun. It's all for the patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Become one of them. Help this show sustain. We appreciate you. Oh, but the speaking of the show, DLC, it's a show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who not only is not the new pope, but wasn't even invited to the conclave, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
One of these days I will become pope, and they will call me not young pope. No, for I am far too old for that. They will call me security. How the hell did this man get in here? And it will be.
Never before has there been a movie about a process that never happened. It very rarely happens. And then that process right back to back. I feel so informed about what must have happened.
It's like if Manchurian Candidate came out this year, you know, like.
Yeah, it's like if, I don't know. Red Dawn. Hey, we got a big, big show for you. We got some big, big video games. It's like every single week in 2025 is a world-smashing Game of the Year candidate video game extravaganza. And such is the case today. Plus some interesting news. We got the biggest trailer release of all time. So much to get to, and we have an awesome guest to do that with. You know,
time. Sorry, was I late on that?
You were a little. you know, the key to comedy. Timing! We have a great guest. DLC always tells you you're downloadable Kanata, you're downloadable Christian. But this week, oh, I'm so excited because once again, DLC stands for DLC's London correspondent. Because from jolly old England, it's our friend, the internet's own, Instagram.com/Will Harris's own, Will Harris. Hey, Will, how are you?
Time. That's the time difference catching up now with us.
Well, he's joining guys, us by London. Are you there, Will?
Christian, I can hear you, and I have heard. Yeah, no, it's lovely to be here, as always, and talk video games. I have been getting stuck into some fantastic, you know, I feel like we say this every year, but this year is really a bumper year for games.
Ah, well done.
There are, I have to say, I'm going to queue up here, too many games.
Oh, you I did it.
It's wonderful actually, to be able to talk about them with you.
Yes, delighted to have you here. It is absurd. Not just the number of great games, but the greatness of the number of games. Do you know what I mean?
Honestly, in any given year, you know, you'd think the first quarter of this year was a bonanza.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's crazy how it just keeps going. But anyway,
bonanza doesn't come out until Bonanza doesn't come out until July, Will. Sorry.
I actually heard it just got pushed to 2026, Christian. That's which is unfortunate.
It punched right into 2026.
No, that's the but how do I can't do it. I was going to try to but put GTA in there somewhere, but we'll get to that. Whatevs.
Yes. Let's jump in. We got so much to get to, so let's start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, your parting gifts. We love hearing from you. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is our email. It's not the only way to reach out, though. You can become part of the community here at DLC by visiting our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Lots of great folks hanging out, talking about all sorts of stuff over there on the Discord. Become part of our fun time crew. But Will, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, I really scratched my head over this one because, frankly, my story of the week was going to be the fact that this podcast is still here after Jeff's Golden State Warriors defeated the Houston Rockets this week.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But maybe we don't talk about that and we gloss over it very quickly.
Well, now I'm worried because Steph's injured and now we might lose to Minnesota. It's, you know, that's the best of times, worst of times situation for me.
But, of course, the story of the week, and I hate to be predictable, but there really is no other story other than the new Grand Theft Auto trailer, which I would say it looks fantastic. I would say it looks amazing. I would say the graphical fidelity looks like nothing we've seen in an open world game. I would say the story looks compelling. I would say the weapons, the number of articles that I've seen dedicated to, here's every car we've seen in GTA 6 so far. Here's every weapon we've seen in GTA 6 so far. But I'm going to be real with you. I got 30 seconds into this trailer and switched it off.
Really?
Because, so before he was shirtless on the roof, you got to get to.
Because you know what, Jeff, you are famous for not watching trailers for upcoming things you're excited to see.
This is true.
And I started watching this GTA famous 6 trailer.
And people evidently overseas, I'm huge, Christian.
Yeah. And in the words of, if you guys watch Archer, the cartoon series, I started watching this trailer and I was like, ugh. I can only get so hard. I have to just stop. And I just thought, there's nothing that's going to make me want to buy this trailer more, make me want to buy this game more than anything. So I turned it off and I thought, I'm going to save it. But okay. I see the reaction. I see everybody talking about it. Guys, GTA 6 looks incredible.
500 million views in 24 hours.
Sorry.
What?
They were mostly me, I think.
Mostly
sorry.
Christian.
Sorry about that.
500 million views from Christian, 1 billion half views from Will. this is the biggest media event of all times. And, you know, people are, as you say, Will, dissecting this. My favorite is, what are those songs that are in this? Hey, kids. What are these crazy tunes that you've never heard before? Evidently, 187% bump on Spotify for each of the Pointer Sisters. You know, it moves the needle, is what I'm saying. This Grand Theft Auto franchise, and yeah, let's dig into it. As you said, Will, a lot of people have pointed out, there seems to have been a very major lighting improvement from trailer one to trailer two. The game looks, I mean, trailer one that we saw, the little teaser that we got last year, already I think the game looked pretty phenomenal. And certainly the number of things happening on any given screen was impressive. But I think visually there's been even another bump from there on the trailer. But so much to dig into. There's not really any gameplay here. It's mostly characters setting things up. We're introduced to a number of new characters, Bobby Moynihan, Stephen Root, as at least voice actors, perhaps even motion capture actors here. So did you ever get around to watching the whole thing, Will, or are you still saving your, because I feel you're right. I do not watch trailers for movies. I like calling it the unsullied lifestyle. Video games, I'm a little different, especially a video game that's going to be hundreds of hours potentially of content. I feel like, you know, there's only so much they're going to spoil that's possible to be spoiled in a trailer for that. But I totally respect your position. But I'm curious if you ever got around to watching the whole thing.
No, look, I absolutely did go and watch the whole thing. I couldn't resist after a while. I succumbed, and I thought there were some really interesting, you know, there's the obvious things to talk about, which we can get to, you know, the graphical fidelity, the music is incredible. Although I do feel like, you know, the music, Rockstar Games always seems like it picks music for people of a certain age.
Yeah. And I appreciate that as someone of a certain age.
And but I really felt like I loved that. I couldn't quite. I loved the fact the trailer started with the. Is it Jason who's the protagonist?
Yes.
Sort of being on a roof and shouting down, "Oh man, just fixing some leaks."
Right.
Which I was like, what I thought was a really nice nod to all the leak stuff that came out a couple of years ago. I mean, it looked totally different from that leak footage of a couple of years ago. I mean, as you'd expect. I loved the fact that it's, I mean, it felt very Vice City, right? It's modern, but it feels like the 80s. It's got that kind of vibe to it. And I thought it kind of indicated there was a little bit, there's a little scene where he's doing like a little bit of weightlifting. And I was like, is this a little like RPG element? Are we getting some character stats that we're going to get to level up in here? I thought that was going to be really interesting. But it just, I have to say, from what I took away was it's like GTA 5, but on steroids with more map, more things to do. I'm interested into how, obviously we have the two different playable characters of Jason and Lucia, a woman, which I'm sure will be absolutely non-problematic for everybody on the internet everywhere.
Yeah.
But, we obviously had three playable characters in GTA 5. I'm interested into how the dual character storyline works out here.
Yeah. Unclear at this point how many of the people we saw would be playable or exactly how that's going to work. Obviously, they've already confirmed that Lucia and Jason, as you said, will be. But also, correction, I said 187%. It's 187,000%. That's the percentage that the Pointer Sisters Spotify downloads went up 187,000%, which is nuts. Christian Spicer, it is undoubtedly the biggest trailer to ever hit video games, but a year we're gonna have to wait. You know, a lot of people, when the delay got announced, were saying, at least give us a trailer. Well, they did. It took a minute, but they did. Is this enough to handle the weight of a year?
I mean, to some extent, I think it makes it harder. I had heard rumors that we were going to get a GTA 6 trailer around now-ish. And I was like, oh, that's so exciting. And that kind of makes sense. You know, the game coming out this year. This is, you know, the kind of the Rockstar cadence. We're going to get that next big trailer. And then we got that delay. And I was like, oh, I've been lied to. All the lies, full of lies. And then we still got the trailer. And I think the trailer is just absolutely, absolutely incredible for doing what Rockstar does so well of showing the vibes of the world, the kind of lived in experience.
So many vibes. It's just so vibe central.
Some people call it Vice City. I call it Vibe City. Okay. So. And the fidelity of this game. I think Rockstar has come out and said, you know, 30 frames per second. It was running on PlayStation 5. They didn't even say PlayStation 5 Pro. I'm very curious how it plays, you know, how that feels. But those scenes, those vignettes they showed were just absolutely stunning. And I mean this in this next part. I mean in a, I'm trying to think of the film comp for what it would be. Maybe, oh my gosh, that just flew out of my head. Quentin Tarantino wrote it, True Romance. In a True Romance kind of way, this is one of the sexiest video game trailers, like, air quote, realistic, sexiest video game trailers of the trailers of this kind of Bonnie and Clyde atmosphere and being all into each other. I mean, this trailer had heat, Jeff. This trailer was hot.
Yes, yes. It's getting a lot of attention for that across the internet of people pulling out very, sexy stuff. And rightfully so. It does look... It looks stunning. You talk about PS5, you know, people noted in Lucia's room at one point, there's a faux PS5 set up to her console.
People were talking about a real PS6.
Yeah. Could it be? Or people were saying maybe you can in GTA 6, you can play GTA Vice City in full. That would be a kind of a fun coup, like sit down in their game world and pull up the old Vice City on a in-game television. That would be funny. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. People have picked this trailer apart. I don't know what else there is to say if we're not going to do that. It looks awesome. It's going to be another year. It's going to be the biggest media event ever. I like to
imagine being a... not just in my regular life, but in this particular context, I like to imagine being like a video games exec and you've spent your whole, last 18 months just clearing your calendar for Christmas 2025. You're like, yeah. Nobody release anything. Guys, you've got to push it forward. You've got to push it back. We're moving the release dates all over the point. We're just avoiding 20. Do you know what, guys? It's going to be safe. Spring 2026. The hullabaloo will have died down. We can push everything that we've got that's major out till then. And then this trailer drops and you're like, well, goddamn.
Everybody back in the office right now.
Conference call immediately.
we're going into crunch. We're getting our game out by 2025. Yeah, hopefully that's not happening. But yes, it is shockwaves heard around the world. I think there's going to be a lot to chew on between now and then. I like how Rockstar does this. I like how they just put out a single trailer, let it sit. They're not flooding the zone. Although that's not, even having said that, they also put out hundreds of screenshots. There's a bunch of screenshots on their website. You know, it's not just that and that alone. But I do think it's a bit of a less is more. They really...
I just love that it's not a traditional marketing campaign.
Yeah.
It's like they know this thing is just going to sell itself and they're not trying to shove it down our throats and they're just trying to make it. It really feels like we have much confidence in our project. We are just going to let it speak for us for itself. And I love that.
Yeah. So stay tuned for May 26th, 2026. And we will be playing it like you, hopefully, if it doesn't get delayed again. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
So there are two other really big stories this week, and I could really go either way on either one. So I'm going to pick the one that I'm more excited about personally, even though I think the other story is perhaps meatier. But the thing that I am more excited about personally is we also got a trailer for, other video games that released trailers this past week. Also, GTA's was just a stealth drop. There was no like trailer for the trailer, no press release. Anyway, but we also got a trailer and information for Mafia, The Old Country, which is coming out this summer. It's coming out at $50. And it is a more Mafia 1 or Mafia 2 style campaign, they've said, which is, linear is not the right word, but it's not the big open world Ubisoft style of game that Mafia 3 kind of leaned into. Or
GTA style of game, right? The original, the idea of Mafia 3 was GTA, but olden times.
Yeah, Mafia 1 was more linear than that. I understand how those comparisons were made. It was, you could tool around the town, but your campaign was kind of more focused. And I think Mafia the Old Country going that route really has me excited. I think what they said in the developer interviews and what they showed in that trailer, I think really got me more excited for this game than I was before. We had talked, I think it was a Summer Games Fest reveal, Jeff, where I was like, in this era – of where they're setting this mafia game in Italy. I don't know how much driving around you do in your 1910 speedster, you know, like for the open world game, or is it Red Dead and you're on horses? And this showed both, but I think having it be contained, I think more so than being that traditional open world game, makes a lot of sense for the setting. I think this game looks fantastic. I'm very excited.
Did you mention August 8th? August 8th is the announced release date. So it's coming relatively soon, coming in the summer, not a fall game, right? This will be a summer release. And I think the biggest, most notable aspect about this is when you kind of glossed over, which is $50. $50 for a big AAA game. Now, you say linear. I wonder if the $50 denotes a shorter experience overall. It doesn't necessarily have to. So much of the conversation right now in video games is about pricing, because we saw Nintendo go to 80. We saw Xbox go to 80. 80 seemingly the next gen AAA baseline price. And yet here we have
the 4.5-year-old current gen baseline.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Unless you're a Zelda. And then we have this Mafia game, which is certainly would fit the mold of a big, you know, anticipated franchise AAA experience. Not only coming out lower than 80, coming out lower than what we've been up to this point. You know, this is a budget title these days, $50. There's a crazy special edition, and that's only 60. So that's still lower than the $70 kind of mainline AAA price we've seen recently. EA came out in an investor's call, and you know, they didn't make promises, but at least right now they said they're not looking at raising prices to 80 on their mainline franchises. That means Madden and FIFA and all the, you know, the Battlefield and all the sort of AAA stuff that EA does. Supposedly, or at least at this moment, they're not looking at $80. So Will, I'm curious how you feel about this. I think, are we at variable pricing in a good way? Like, are we giving people options, or is it sort of just the slow crawl toward 80 that everybody has not caught up to yet?
So, I mean, it's interesting. I feel like psychologically, and maybe this is just, you know, a quirk of my brain, I think of games as being like, are they less than $10 on Steam? Or are they full price? And to me, it's like full price is like, I don't care, but like whether it's $50, $60, $80, it all counts to me. Like, it's a significant dollar investment. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more than the less than $10 I pay for Brotato or whatever on Steam. And, you know, it's great. It's like Mafia, the Old Country is $50. Another A-list title is $80. Does that make me $30 more likely to buy Mafia, the Old Country? Absolutely not, because I could not give two hoots about this game. Ah. I would rather take my $50 and spend it on 3 months of HBO Max and rewatch all of The Sopranos. And like that is a better okay. investment for me in my Mafia world. I don't know, for something about the Mafia franchise just never really caught for me. I don't know whether it's the fact that I always love the meme of like space is better than old, which always applies to like Blizzard, right? It's like StarCraft for me always better than Warcraft, and it's like if we're taking two franchises like GTA better than Mafia, modern better than old, I can't get behind it. And the fact that it's only $50, that's still $50 I don't want to spend on this game.
it's two things I don't like: old and country. I'm a city boy in the modern times, baby. Christian, I agree with you. I think this game looks really strong. I love that they're coming out at a budget price point. What do you think about this? I guess
we can't call $50 budget. That's still a lot of money.
You're not wrong in
this economy.
Yeah, you're not wrong. This game is being imported from the old country, so it's. Going to be subject to a tariff. This is after tariff pricing. Christian, what do you make of $50 for Mafia? Does that denote it as being less than in some bizarro way?
I don't think so. There certainly was a time, right, where a game would get announced at less than whatever the standard MSRP was for games of the era, and there'd be like the internet, or to some extent before the internet, there'd be a collective like, ooh, something's fishy about this. That's, I was excited, but now I'm not. It was the equivalent of a game's review embargo being launch day. It was like, something fishy. But I don't think that's the case anymore.
In either case, by the way, game review embargoes being launch day is almost commonplace now.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, it's going to be fire. I don't know if we're in the era of variable pricing being a thing or a norm. I'm very curious how this game landed on its price. And I wonder if part of it is just creating market differentiation. Golly, I can't. We're recording early. My brain's half broken. And that becomes the thing that folks gravitate toward in its discussion. How do you differentiate yourself in the crowded market, as you mentioned at the top of the show, Jeff, where every week a Game of the Year contender is coming out? And somewhere someone did the math on this, and it was like, we're going to sell X number of units. The way we maximize number go up is, you know, at this correlation between price and number of units. And it kind of felt like the sweet spot for him, I guess, because I'm trying to think of other games. And we're going to talk about Doom in a little bit. You know, it's very much a single player, linear game, not launching at a quote budget price. Uncharted, when it launched back in the day, very much a linear single player game, did not launch at a budget price. You know, it's not a thing we've seen before, and I don't think it'll become the norm. I also have to acknowledge that it's a 2K game too, and 2K isn't the publisher that's usually like, you know what, let's do this one for the little people. Like, 2K is all about that money, you know? So I don't know.
Well, you know, we have not heard yet what the MSRP on GTA 6 will be. And I think that could potentially be a earth shattering moment. If they come out and they're like, it's $89.99 or it's $99.99 base price, which they could possibly do and still sell an absurd number of copies. I suspect that won't be what happens. I think there'll be a version of the game that you can buy for $150 or whatever it is. But I suspect this will be, you know, potentially a $70 game, but more likely an $80 game, GTA 6. But I do think interesting.
It would just be like, hey, guys, do you like digital art books? Because guess what? I've got $85 worth of digital art books to sell to you.
Yeah, and you know, we haven't heard anything about what a GTA 6 online experience is going to be. I mean, that's really where they make all their money. Certainly, they make their money in lots of ways with GTA, but that's another way to make all their money. So they're going to have tons of ways to monetize that game, and it's going to have a long tail, just like GTA 5 did. But I love the fact that we're at least getting some experimentation with price on games that I think on the face of them you would not expect to be. Like you said, Will, you get on Steam and there's indie games and stuff. We're sort of used to them being fitting in at lower price points, and I love that, and I'm glad indie publishers are figuring that out and thriving in that way. But there seems to be a kind of game that you can see coming that is going to be the sort of standard highest price game, and Mafia: The Old Country seems that game. And the fact that they're experimenting with this, the fact that EA is coming out and saying, "Well, we're not going up $10 yet," remains to be seen if that's true, but I like the fact that some publishers aren't rushing to meet this $80 price point just because, you know, Nintendo cracked the door open. So I'm hopeful we'll see more of this. And I think you're right, Christian. It is a differentiator. It is a way to, you know, say, hey, maybe you don't have to wait for a sale for ours, you know, because I think a lot of folks do have to wait for sales. And, you know, if you're already talking, hey, you can save $30 on this one. I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you, Will, that that's not a significant thing for some. It you know, that's your 2/3 of the way to another $50 game, right? Or 3/5 of the way to the math. You'd think that would be an easy math problem for me. And yet here I did mess it up still.
2 months of Max. We can just say it's 2 months of Max. Indeed, so you can have Mafia and your Sopranos. Well,
all right. I'm going to
get both.
I'm going to take a second. I'm going to get out my pen and paper. I'm going to work out some math problems. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more of our story of the week right after these messages. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Factor. Make this your best season yet with nutritious two-minute meals from Factor. Eating well has never been this easy. You just heat up and enjoy, giving you more time to do what you want. That's what they say, Christian, and I have found it to be true. You know what I hate? I hate stopping what I'm doing to feed myself. It's so annoying. I don't like it. I don't like having to figure it out.
Feeding myself. Yeah, the feeding myself part is usually pretty dang enjoyable. And I think, you know, certainly feeding myself Factor is very enjoyable. It's all the stuff leading up to me actually feeding myself.
Yeah, it's the prep. It's the figuring out what you're going to have. And mostly what I use Factor for is lunch. And I love having them ready to go right in my fridge. Don't have to prep. I don't have to cook. These Factor meals arrive at my doorstep fresh, ready to eat, perfect for my lifestyle, which is I'm probably, you know, playing a video game and I want to stop. Or, you know, I'm involved in something. I'm on the go. I got no time to make myself lunch.
He means playing
lunch.
A video game and doesn't want to stop. That's what he means.
Okay, I've been playing a video
game. You could have stopped after you said that. We all know what you meant. Yeah,
it's true. Factor has 45 weekly menu options. You can pick gourmet meals that fit your goals. You choose from Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and more. And these are good. They're tasty. I love having Factor meals on hand when my mom comes into town. My mom comes into town usually like once every 6 weeks or so to hang out, see the grandkids. She stays with us. I love having Factor meals to give to her because then I don't have to worry about, you know, her when I'm working during the day or what. She's here. She needs to eat. She needs to have a meal. These are delicious. I feel good giving them to her because it's like, hey, she's going to enjoy them. They also have satisfying breakfasts, on-the-go lunches, premium dinners, guilt-free snacks and desserts. Factor meals pack in the flavor with none of the fuss. It really is so easy. Pop them in the microwave, 2 minutes, and you're done. And we're going to help you out. If you want to get started, you can go to factormeals.com/DLC50off. Use our code DLC50OFF, that's DLC50OFF, to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code DLC50OFF at factormeals.com/DLC50OFF. 50% off plus free shipping. You got to try it. Factormeals.com/DLC50OFF. All right, guys, turns out it's three-fifths. It's three-fifths. And I got a story of the week for you, folks. We got another new game announcement. And by new, I mean not new. Another remaster. But a remaster that I think is going to be pretty fun, pretty exciting. Another August game. Again, the hits, they just keep on coming. It's going to be a relentless summer and a relentless year for Xbox Game Pass, because this is another game that's coming to Xbox Game Pass. The unbelievable value for that service this year. And the game is Gears of War Reloaded. This is the first Gears of War. It will have all of the content from the Ultimate Edition of Gears of War. It's coming August 26th. It'll be hitting Game Pass, Xbox Series, Steam, and, oh, yes, PlayStation 5 as well.
What?
Yeah, day and date, PlayStation 5, which I think somebody predicted in the predictions episode.
Jeff was right.
Oh, I was? Was I? Okay. It's going to have a faster frame rates, deeper visual fidelity. A quote, every detail has been tuned to bring the original game into the present with clarity, smoothness, an immersion that matches the power of today's hardware. Will Gears of War Reloaded, a remaster for the original, the game that changed a lot of things with the way third-person action games kind of put catapulted Unreal Engine into a place that it's now, you know, it has continued to be in the industry. A big, big game, big, big franchise. Are you excited for this reloaded remaster?
Jeff, I am hype for this game. I played the original Gears of War, I mean, to absolute death on... Man, was it an Xbox 360 game? Am I going back? That is a long time ago, right?
It was, yeah, 360.
And it was so revolutionary at the time. That cover mechanic was just incredible.
Yeah,
that visceral feeling of like just blowing the heck out of all these aliens. The sort of half nod to a pseudo competent storyline with Marcus. It was an incredible game, and I feel like Gears of War is one of those series that slightly suffered from like the law of diminishing returns. It's like by the time you got to Gear 5, you're like, this again. You know, maybe we've added a new move and a new few weapons and the original Gears just stands on its own and stands up to replaying. And I cannot wait to get stuck into this in proper 4K with mega, you know, visual fidelity. I still think the original Gears did it best of all the Gears, and I am really psyched to jump back into it, especially because I think it's on PS5 Pro, this is going to look like an absolute beast.
Yeah, pretty wild that we're getting a Gears of War game on PlayStation 5. But Christian Spicer, we had Elder Scrolls Oblivion just launch there as well, a remaster that has just been absolutely crushing the sales charts, both on PlayStation 5. We got a Forza on PlayStation 5 that's also crushing the charts. I mean, if you look at the sales for PlayStation this month, it's like all Xbox exclusives or former Xbox exclusives. Pretty wild stuff. Never thought we'd see it, but here we are. What do you think of Gears of War Reloaded for $40 on PlayStation 5 coming August 26th?
I think I'll have more to say about whether or not you were right come our predictions episode, Jeff. I remember there being more to your...
I heard you say...
Jeff was right.
Because that's your voice.
We'll get to that. When this was announced, you know, this reveal of this game and then all of the places it's coming to, my first thought was not the golden era, but whatever the era is, we are in it of remasters and remakes. And I don't know how long the era has lasted. You know, I don't know if it's as long as Taylor's era, which is 3.5 hours of an incredible show and choreographed to perfection and a wonderful VOD that you can watch at home of the concert. Or if it's a decade, I don't know how long this era is. But whether it's games are too expensive to make, it's the version of Hollywood only makes IP, like the thing needs to be safe. But it is just so many games getting this remake, this remaster, this re-release. And it's been going on for a while, but I feel like it's really picked up steam in the past few years. And while I, too, as an old, am excited to play a prettier version of Gears of War 1, I mean, I remember going to Best Buy and picking up my physical edition of whatever the last version of Gears of War 1 remastered was, which now Microsoft has said if you bought that one, which I did, they're going to give you this version for free, which is a nice perk. But, you know, the cynic in me is how many versions of The Last of Us do I need to own? How many versions of Gears of War do I need to own? I love the Gears of War franchise as well, but when am I going to get a remake of 2? Or if we're talking remakes, it feels... I'm a little scared for what it might say about AAA game production in the future of games, that so many of these big releases are these lookbacks of established franchises. And I'm not sure exactly what to make of it yet, but man, Jeff, there are a lot of them. Whole lot of them.
Yeah, I might argue that it's not an era, that this might be the new norm. This might be where we are now, and that these are safer bets and less expensive bets, and we've seen them yield a lot of sales. Oblivion, of course, the most recent example, but there's many, many, many examples. And I think I think you're going to find more and more of these companies digging into those catalogs. And we've just gotten to the point now where the industry is mature enough and technology has advanced enough that you have this delta between when these games, these excellent games, were released and when we can, you know, update that. There's a big enough delta in their visual fidelity. There's enough, you know, I guess Last of Us notwithstanding, but most of these games, there is a marked improvement in how they're, you know, Oblivion looks night and day from when it was released in 2000, whatever it was, six. So, you know, I think this is not just an era. I think this is going to be the new norm, and we're going to see this continue as long as companies have stuff that they can mine that they can give to players and reintroduce to new audiences.
I think absolutely. And if I was being incredibly cynical, which as a Brit I'm predetermined to do, I have to imagine that someone at Microsoft has just built a little version, their own little version of ChatGPT, and said, hey, can I give you this texture from the original Gears of War? Okay, can you now make it 4K and high definition and HDR enabled? And you just give it a batch file of every texture that's in that game. And 10 minutes later, you get all the high res textures. And what used to cost you a year of work to completely redesign, you probably do in 10 minutes, right?
I'm not saying
that's what they're doing. Yeah, but it does feel like step one, create LLM. Step two, feed it. It's step three, ... step four, profit.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. I mean, I don't know that that's how this is being done, but I wouldn't be surprised. And certainly, you know, I think the results have been pretty fun and pretty welcome from my perspective. And I like, you know, again, we're talking about price. I like the fact that this is $40, not going to be a $80 game or whatever it is. And
it's more to the point, it's Game Pass. So yeah, it's like $10. It's basically free.
And if you're one of those people that has been only in the PlayStation ecosystem for multiple generations, you're getting all of these incredible experiences that Xbox gamers have been, you know, raving about, justifiably so, for quite a long time. So I, you know, it's a win-win-win, and except for potentially labor, we shall see. I think it's funny, Christian, that you say, oh, well, then are you going to give me Gears 2 and Gears 3 remasters? I mean, why is that a negative thing? I think that's a
yes,
positive
please
thing.
I will take those
they
all the way to the bank on my free Game Pass subscription.
Yeah.
They haven't yet. You know,
well,
it's
but
like
they're doing the first one. They're like,
they've
mean,
already done
on.
The first one.
When did they do the first one?
It was called, what was it called? I mean, we were doing the show, which doesn't mean much because we've been doing this show for a while.
I do not recall that. They remastered the Gears of War already?
Yeah, and because you get a free copy of Reloaded if you've already bought Ultimate Edition. Fans who own the digital...
So double free. So this is basically... this is just more win than any one man can handle.
But I don't think that was a... Okay, let's look up what Ultimate Edition was. Gears of War
Are we into that thing of like remastered versus...
Oh, you're right.
It's a remastered edition of the 2006 video game Gears of War.
Yeah, 2015. I don't recall this even happening.
I bought a physical copy at Best Buy.
An enhanced port based on Ultimate Edition.
Yeah, and it was like an Unreal 4 engine game. And now I think looks like this one is updated to Unreal 5.
Boy,
well, then it's going to be 20% better. 45.
I memory hold this completely.
I learned my fractions off Jeff earlier, and now I can tell you.
I completely memory hold this. I thought Ultimate Edition came out when the original game came out, and you're absolutely right, Christian. This is a Last of Us, more Last of Us situation than I remembered it being. I should have looked this up. Wow. But, you know, I still think this is probably going to look significantly better and play significantly better than that game, which is now almost 10 years old in and of itself. So
which
at least it's
wild.
Not Last of Us where it's like, yeah, 2 years ago we released it.
Which I love and own. So, you know, I can't.
Yeah.
It's just when looked at in total.
Yeah.
How many of these we're getting, you know, Jeff, you said that this is maybe just the new normal. But I wonder, are we creating enough franchise hits that this can sustain? I wrote a newsletter, christianspicer.substack.com, a while ago about how many games we used to get in a series in a, you know, 7 year period. Uncharted 1, 2, 3, Last of Us 1, 2, Ratchet and Clank 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You know, it felt like. And you built this affinity for franchises, Gears of War, Halo. I think Halo 1, 2, and 3, all each successive one came out two and a half years after the one before it. And I don't know if we're building this brand affinity or franchise affinity for folks coming into the hobby or aging into the hobby now as we continue to mine these games that have already been remastered once a decade ago. That's what I'm curious about, how sustainable it is going forward.
Well, but is that just a case of like how long it now takes to develop these games? I mean, Halo 1, 2, and 3 were fundamentally built on the same engine.
Right.
And, you know, you could develop things a lot quicker. It feels like games these days take more money, more time, more manpower. And so while we're waiting for Gears of War 7 to be the sort of Unreal Engine 7 monstrosity that it will be in 2028 or whatever, you've got to do something. You've got to fill the schedule gaps, right?
Yeah. I think that's exactly what the point of Oblivion is we're a ways off. We're a long ways off from an Elder Scrolls 6. So this is what we're going to give you in the interim. And you know, we've talked at the beginning about how there's, you know, too many games and there's plenty of stuff to play. I'm not clamoring for more sequels.
Sorry, Jeff. What are there? Thank you.
The notion that, you know, that we need more sequels, that somehow that's better for a brand, you know, pumping out the sequels than, you know, revisiting the thing that made them great in the first place. I don't know. I think it's going to six of one, half a dozen the other when it comes to that versus new IP or building, you know, new brands. You're serving the audience one way or the other. Either you're pumping out a sequel or you're remaking something that is already beloved. I think it points to the same issue, if there is one, that you need to constantly reinvigorate and not just, you know, revisit. But I certainly am not sad that we don't, you know, that game franchises take longer to have a new installment. I think that generally makes for better games when we take a little time and we wait. And I don't have a problem going back and revisiting great games in new ways, especially when it's been a minute. You know, Gears of War Ultimate was 10 years ago. 10 years, not a short amount of time.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a decade. We were all in a very different place a decade ago.
I had so much less gray. It was a wonderful time.
I think we haven't really even chewed into the PlayStation 5 side of things and how Xbox as a console is dead. But
do you think that?
I'm not buying the next one. They haven't. Let's go ahead and pivot. I mean, I don't
you
think they
have an Xbox. It's your cat litter box. It's your.
Yeah. It's anything that I want it to be. I don't think they're doing their hardware side of the business any services here, and maybe that's the plan. You know, maybe larger Microsoft is like, hey, we don't need to spend this money. Like, let's get this cloud service up. Let's get our games onto other platforms. But I think if that is the case, I think that is a bummer, because if you only have PlayStation making this high-end home console, and then you have PCs, but they're never quite as easy to sit on the couch and play, despite strides in that over the past several years or decades, it's still not the same as plopping down in front of a console and grabbing your controller. I think it'd be a bummer.
I mean, the traditional model of console sales, right, was always that you sell the hardware based on loss in order to recoup the money on the games. I feel like what Microsoft is doing with Game Pass and with its cross-platform release strategy is, hey guys, what if we didn't sell the console at a loss, but just still made all the money on the games?
Or what if we just didn't sell the console?
Yeah, it's like, just put it out on PS5. Do you know what? You know, I keep coming back to the fact that the PlayStation Online offering, like PS Plus, is so, like, I'm going to try not to swear here. It's so awful. It's so expensive for so little that it's like, if I could get Game Pass on PlayStation 5, then I'll make Sony take the loss on the hardware and I'll just give all my money to Microsoft.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if we'll ever see that. I'm curious if Sony will allow Game Pass on their system at some point. But they keep putting all these press releases that, oh, we're making the next version of the Xbox hardware. It's going to be amazing. they say lots of things that turn out not to be true. So take that with a grain of salt in and of itself. But if it is true, I'm certainly curious at what that value proposition is going to be, how they're going to sell this thing. If it's just, hey, here's an alternative to PlayStation that's also super powerful, I don't know if that's enough when you've got the idea that, hey, all the Xbox stuff is going to be on PlayStation and all the PlayStation stuff. I don't
unless
know.
Unless it's just Game Pass. Unless it's just here's your console.
Pass box. Yeah.
Do we have tariffs on virtual subscriptions yet? Because I guarantee you, if the new Xbox comes out in the next couple of years, it's going to cost about $1,500.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I also, like you, Christian, I'm hoping that Xbox does not get out of the hardware in business. And that was what everybody was saying. It's like, oh, they're going the way of Sega. They're going the way of Sega. And they're just going to be a third-party publisher. And it's hard not to see that trajectory in the tea leaves. But
no, but the difference is, Jeff, Microsoft has infinity money.
That's right.
And Sega did not.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And they can afford to dither in the hardware end.
Yeah, maybe. And I say this, you know, I think the thing that makes it sad is maybe not the right word, but the one console future is you need to have a company that invests in making that console, you know, yeah. Otherwise no one wants to do it. Or you just get, maybe it all just unifies around a PC, which I guess is still Microsoft winning a weird twist of fate, unless Linux and Valve are able to really pivot in there in a larger way, even than the Steam Deck. And maybe that is the future, is just truly consolized versions of PCs that, you know, are so simple to start, reboot, and figure out. And you can have crash on you multiple times during a podcast recording and know what's wrong and why it's happening.
Right? They are basically PCs. That's what we've already arrived there. You know?
Yeah, but not in the way that I can buy the HP PlayStation 5 and I can buy the Panasonic PlayStation 5.
That's true.
Yeah. The way that is. So I'm curious to see. I'm curious to see where it goes. But as a current moment person who loves video games, I think this Gears of War game getting announced for everything on day and date is a huge win. I'm just nervous for what it might need.
Jeff was right.
And we'll get to that at the end of the year. I'm the best part about all these bumpers, Jeff, is I get to hear my own voice talking crap to myself, which is
that's the joy for me.
It's really nice.
You did it yourself. You know, I love that.
But I'm curious to see what it means in 5 years. Sorry.
We got a ton of games to get to. So let's do that. But first, we're going to take another break for a sponsor. We'll be right back right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by MSI and their latest motherboards, the Intel Z890 and the B860 motherboards. These are motherboards built for gamers, built for enthusiasts, built to pack in the power that you want as somebody that's going to squeeze the last frame per second out of your game. And they're made for easy DIY. If you've thought about building your own PC, Christian, it's fun. It's fun to build your own PC, right?
Yeah, and if you're listening to this the minute it drops, you still have a little bit of time, if you're on the West Coast, that this can be a Mother's Day mother's board. Like, you got a small window to make that joke work, but it works if you're listening to
this. You can have it be Motherboard Day any day of the year.
Do you know what you should do with your mom? Build a new computer.
Well, hey, it would be easy, I tell you that, because they've streamlined their own custom PC builds with MSI. They've got these what they call one-hand assembly, so you can install your motherboard very, very easily. This is installing the motherboard into the case itself. It supports single-handed installation. They have a pre-installed I/O shield. But not only that, the motherboard itself has one finger installation for stuff that you're going to apply right to the motherboard. That's your M.2 SSDs. That's your cards, your PCIe cards. It's a single finger installation. That means you don't have to pull out the screwdrivers. You don't have to have a bunch of tools sitting around. It's so much easier. And I know, Christian, you've talked about how much you love the easy debug LEDs. The BIOS and the LEDs make it so that if you run into issues, it's much clearer what's going wrong with your build.
Man, there is nothing better than what these boards and modern PC building brings to the table, other than the Dark Ages version where you were like two sticks in a cave and hoping you can make fire that wouldn't suffocate you.
Yeah.
There's, couldn't figure it out. And now it's so simple.
There's a lot of things that can be tricky, and it's nice having that information, having it built with the intent to make it clear, not to the, you know, the professional that does, you know, 40 of these every week, to the you and the me that is doing it once every several years, and still clear and easy to work with. That's what MSI is focused on, is the DIYers, the people like us that are just doing it, doing this once for their own personal use and still want it to be smooth and easy. Also, folks, if you're, you know, excited about the slate of amazing looking PC games right now, now's the time to upgrade. And we're going to give you a special deal. Listeners to DLC are getting 5% off on the Intel Z890 and B860 motherboards. All you got to do is go to the MSI US store. That's us-store.msi.com. Use the promo code MSIPOD, MSIPOD. That gives you 5% off. And the coolest thing about this discount is that it's stackable. If you've ever gone and bought something online and you wanted to put in a discount code and there was already a discount there and it's like, one or the other. Not so here. These are stackable. So they have their other promotion with their $120 in Steam codes. You could get up to $120 in Steam codes on top of your motherboard discount. This is the perfect deal for people that are into video games, because you're going to get Steam codes, 5% off your MSI card at us-store.msi.com with that promo code MSIPOD. Check it out. Build your own. Have a blast doing it and feel the pride of knowing you did it yourself. You built your rig. All right, let's dig into our playlists in a segment aptly titled The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Traditionally, we start this segment of the show by asking our guest what they've been playing. But Will, before we started, was like, hey, guys, I want to hear about Doom. I haven't been playing Doom. You two have been playing Doom. I want to hear about Doom. So we're gonna eschew the norm, and we're going to start with Christian and myself, who've both been playing Doom the Dark Ages on our playlist. We both got early copies.
Can I just preface that by saying that I hate you both? Because I really want to be playing this, and you have it now, and I can't have it yet. And everybody
else. Fair enough.
Else.
It will be yours very soon. It is on its way. We got early copies. We got also NVIDIA sent both of us 50 series video cards. And so we've been playing these on PC on very beefy GPs. Christian, it's real pretty. Doom the Dark Ages.
It is very pretty, and I think we'll talk more about all of that stuff later. But yeah. The game itself. So I put out an embargo review also at christianspector.substack.com if you want to like read what I'm about to say, but to give a little more in depth than what I was willing to type. A lot of what I thought, my impressions from the early hands-on.
Yeah.
Impressions that I got to do whenever that was a couple of months ago hold true to this final release. So I think my play time through the campaign was under 20 hours. I have to open up Steam. I would guess like 18 and a half hours. And that's not a completionist. You know, I didn't find every secret in every level or anything like that, but I got a lot of them. You know, I didn't go out of my way to look for them, but when I saw that thread, I would pull on it and go find those secret areas and do those things. But a lot of what I talked about from that hands-on gameplay hold true to this final release. The short version is Doom the Dark Ages is, in my opinion, an absolutely incredible action first-person shooter when it's humming at its best, which thankfully is most of the game. The other part of that coin is a lot of the new touted new additions to the game, the, you know, more fleshed out campaign and cutscenes, the dragon and the mech that you climb into, I could live without.
Yeah.
You know, they're fine. They're fine. They're palate cleansers. The cutscenes certainly look beautiful. They're well produced. But at no point was I like, yes, I finally get to find out what this means about the Doomslayer. Like, all I need is demons bad, demons invading, Doomslayer really hate demons.
And that's all you really get as well.
They try to tell you.
That's all you really get. It's like, it's funny when they're like, but this one has a story, to which I would reply, does it?
I mean, if you read all the lore in Doom Eternal, you'd be like, yes, finally.
I mean, honestly, guys, when I play a Doom game, the first thing I think is, what's my character's motivation here?
I like that this game casts the Doom Slayer as like a Frankenstein's monster, you know? There's something fun about that, where it's like, this guy is so powerful that everybody's terrified of him, and some people want to kind of use him as a weapon, and other people are just scared of him, and that's kind of fun. But ultimately, you know, I have not finished the game. There's 22 chapters. I'm on chapter 9, so less than halfway. But that's a lot of game. I've played a lot of Doom, the Dark Ages. So maybe the story gets amazing in the back half, and I haven't seen it. But I will tell you, in my opinion, I am not someone who ever, ever skips cutscenes the first time I see them. These cutscenes are skippable. They offer so little texture to what you're doing.
Yeah, you're not lost when you load the next level. Like, wait.
No.
There's where am
cool
I going?
Stuff. Like, they show you some cool stuff. And the whole, like, aesthetic of techno barbarian is awesome. The idea of this sort of, you know, Will, you did the space versus old Doom, get you a Doom that does both, because this does it is literally space and old mashed up at the same time. You got
what?
It's cool. It's a really cool aesthetic. It's barbarians in, you know, mostly shirtless armor that's got, you know, they got pelts and barbarian stuff and like helms and stuff, but they're standing in spaceships and they have force fields and techno armor, and you got a dragon that's like laser dragon, you know. It's what if the dragon was a Harley in space? Space Harley dragon. So like the aesthetic is really cool, and you see a lot of the aesthetic in the cutscenes, right? The cutscenes are showing you these other characters, and you know, when you're in the game, you're basically just seeing demons, you know, and your hands, and you're actually getting a little texture of the rest of the world. But story wise, I could not care less. Like, it's not great. There's no characters that matter or that I care about. There's no, you know, it doesn't do any of the normal storytelling things. It just like presents some contexts for your wanton destruction. And for me, the wanton destruction is plenty. This is an extraordinarily fun game. Just balls to the wall fun. And it really, you know, somebody said, what is the phrase? All go and no slow or something like that. You know, this one's on 11. Whatever phrase you want to use to describe it, that is Doom. It is, you're shot out of a cannon in this game, and it's just nonstop. There's guitar riffs going in your ears. That's the Doom experience, right? You're go, go, going. And I think the thing that is most surprising to me about Doom the Dark Ages is how they're able to really tweak the fundamental moment-to-moment feeling of being in a Doom game in these three iterations. You know, you had Doom, what, 2016? And then what was the last Doom subtitle? I can't remember.
Eternal,
thank you. And then this one. And Christian, you know, it occurred to me, it feels almost like three different classes that you might have in a game, right? Pick your class, and you have these different Doom sequels that are like three different classes of the same game. It's like, I'm still playing Destiny, but my character, based on the class that I'm playing, plays very differently. And this one feels like I picked a tank class for Doom, right? It's an entire own game. It doesn't have multiple classes to pick in and of itself, but these sequels are presenting the fundamental Doom experience that was introduced in 2016, this forward momentum. You know, how am I going to get health? How am I going to get ammo? How am I going to get these resources I need? The answer is always keep going forward, keep attacking, push, 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 which is really fun and really kinetic. And, you know, this sort of adrenaline fueled propulsive experience, but done very differently, because Eternals is like, you know, you're the rogue type or whatever you want to call it, the high jumping, you know, smaller, more agile version in the game, in whatever the MMO metaphor I'm making here. And in Doom, the Dark Ages, this one, you're this heavier, tanky, shield bearing brute. And it really does feel that way. The first second that I launched this game, I think one of the first things I did is push the jump button, and it felt heavy. And I immediately was like, oh no, that doesn't feel very good. And then the game quickly introduces you to the kineticism that it is working with, which is not leaping around, which is not, it's not doing what Doom Eternal did, but it's pushing you forward. This shield bash that is always at your disposal, the shield throw, you are still moving at an incredible pace. And it still feels like this on 11 constant, you know, bullet train through bodies that are just exploding around you, but in a different fashion, in this beefier, heavier, you know, just the fact that you can fall from any height. And when you land, if there's enemies around you, they all just fly off into the ether. That's one of my favorite things to do in any game, but here it just happens on its own. You don't need to like skill tree into it. You don't need to push a button. You just land and you're so big and powerful that enemies just fly away at your mere presence, which is so, it feels so good. And really, honestly, that's my biggest takeaway from Doom. It feels good. I've talked in the past about what I call punctuation in action games, that feeling that everything lands, that you're talking in complete sentences or complete phrases, that if I'm doing this, it's a phrase and it ends with punctuation. And I feel like I did something and now I did something else, and everything feels concussive and impactful. Doom does that so well, and Doom the Dark Ages proves it again. Everything feels good. Every impact, every punch, every kicking open a door or blasting through the door, in this case with your shield, everything that you do always has weight and feels meaningful. And they really nail that. Every gun, the impact of every gun, the firing of every gun, they all feel a little bit different, but they all have this punctuation that I love. And so, you know, it's one of those games where, if like I stop playing it for the day and I come back the next day, it feels like I have to catch up to the game. Like you get into this rhythm of incredibly fast movement and dealing with dozens and dozens of enemies at a time. And you are really playing a rhythm game here. It really is this Rochambeau, you know, color match, do this when you see the prompt. It's improvisational. It's, you know, I'm thinking on the fly. So it's not just a rote, what you see is what you get. You have options within it, but it you are in this pace of, I see that, I push that, I do that, I see that, I push that, I need this, so I do that. And you're doing it at such a pace and such a intensity level that like, when I start playing on a new day and I haven't like ramped into that, I almost feel like, oh my God, this game is overwhelming. I can't handle it. And then, you know, 2.5 minutes later, I'm right back in that pace again. But it really isn't like other games. It feels like this zone you have to be in to just process all the inputs that you're getting at one time. Right, Christian?
I'd push back on the idea of it being a rhythm game or describing it that way. I feel like it's very smartly designed combat. I would agree with everything else that you said, but I want to put that wrapper on it. And I think an illustration of how smartly designed the game is, as you mentioned, when you jump off of a cliff or a higher area and you land, all of the enemies kind of just immediately are decimated below you and scatter. And I think that's really smart gameplay design, because the only enemies that are there are mob type enemies. So they're never going to put those larger enemies that can't be dispatched with a simple shield bash there, because that would not feel good to land and have this brained scorpion thing be sitting there. Or the kind that, you know, I found the most difficult to dispatch are these kind of phantom ghost wraiths. I forget their actual name. That
invisible enemies are the worst.
Well, this one's visible. You just can't. It projects a different version of itself at a different place of the map that is also attacking you, as you have to locate its actual physical being to then track down. And it's also attacking you. And there's a million other things. But those enemies aren't in those moments where you jump off the cliff and they scatter. So, again, I think it's really smart design for having that feel good moment happen that ultimately is inconsequential in terms of how you'd approach that combat, because those imps or whatever those mob enemies are, you could dispel very quickly with a shield bash and 20 of them fly away. And I think the same is true of the combat, which, again, I would agree with how you described it. I just don't know. A rhythm game to me implies you have to do it a certain way or else you're going to hit this fail state. And the way Doom the Dark Ages designed, they've designed the combat is this. You have all of these weapons at your disposal, and the game introduces a lot of weapons. It has the first, you know, maybe 5 hours of the game, I was like, oh, they've given me a lot of weapons already. Is this pace going to continue? It does. You keep getting new weapons. You're able to upgrade, you know, your abilities in really fun, smart ways that make you feel more empowered during combat. You get other versions of guns, like the shotgun to the super shotgun, and the way they have that quickly accessible to you.
So smart.
So smart and so great on a controller. And so you're able to get into these combat experiences that there is not a wrong way to do it, but they're constantly prompting you with, you know, going back to I'm trying to think of like the oldest school example of it. But it's like, oh, this enemy has a shield. I can pound my way through it, or I can switch to this other weapon that will dispatch this shield more quickly. But also bearing down on me on my six is this other type of enemy that would best be dispatched with this other type of weapon. And how are you
six, on your eight, on your on your 11? Yes. It's you're just bombarded constantly on all sides.
Yes.
Yes.
And it feels so good because you're constantly running this risk analysis of how you're going to do it. And I think where Doom the Dark Ages feels its best, which again, thankfully, is most of its around 20-hour runtime, is when it is putting you in a situation that requires you to use everything at all times. So you use this type of gun to dispel these plasma shields. You do your shield throw to get rid of these metal shields. You switch to this other weapon to take down this one enemy that, you know, there's this other type of flying imp that's zooming around that, you know, you can shield bash two to stun, which will then slow it down long enough for you to throw your shield into to create a longer stun so that you can switch over to your super shotgun or your rocket launcher to otherwise hit it. And without doing that, you wouldn't be able to hit it because it's too fast for that powerful of a weapon, but you're able to do that. And you're able to chain all of these things together. And it really feels like, I guess what I would use the wrapper I'd put on it is a flow state. It gets you into a combat flow state so effectively and so efficiently that there are few games that do what the Doom franchise is able to do. And I think the way I would describe the three games is Doom 2016 really revolutionized or reinvented the Doom franchise. And what they brought to the table was this push and pull idea, Jeff, as you mentioned, of how is it constantly encouraging you to fight? Doom is the antithesis of Gears of War, right? Gears of War, again, revolutionary when it launched, but was this idea of cover, then engage, then pull out of combat, regroup, cover, engage, all of that. Doom 2016 was like, what if always engage? What if you never have the option to not be engaged, right? Like,
go, go, go. It's just go, go, go.
And then how do we make that interesting? So they came up with this Rochambeau style approach to things. And then Doom Eternal had that nugget. You know, it had that idea, and it's like, well, what if we add verticality? What if we add mobility to it? And what Doom the Dark Ages kind of reexamined from that is like, what if we have that Doom 2016, that important piece of the combat flow of 2016, but look to OG original Doom as our inspiration? You're on the ground, you have projectiles flying fast and furious at you. And so they created this parry mechanic that then creates a stun for these enemies. If done properly, you send the green projectiles back. I joked to you via text, Jeff, that hell would easily win the day if they could just put the memo out to all their demons that said no shooting green projectiles.
Yeah.
Red
guys, stick with red.
Red only. Works. Red works.
Why are we green. Experimenting with green?
I love the initiative, David. No green. But it creates, you know, this new twist on a classic formula. That maintains the core of what 2016 is, but does it in this new way. And if I were to rank all three of these, this current trilogy of Doom, I would say 2016 is still my favorite because it's hard to undo the shine of what that revolution was of Doom 2016. But then nipping on its heels is Doom the Dark Ages. And then a few clicks behind that is Eternal, which was a little too frenetic for my taste. But I think Doom the Dark Ages is an absolute home run. I understand the dragon and the mech as that palate cleanse type reset. I just don't think they fully... I think the mech is probably the weakest.
Oh, I disagree. I think the mech is fun for me. The mech is a fully... I mean, both the mech and the dragon, in my opinion, are full rhythm games. The mech is a rock'em sock'em robot fun time. I liked it. I felt big. I felt awesome. I felt like some of those old boxing titles that they don't make anymore. So I liked the mech, and it did feel like the sense of scale is impressive. I think I feel like you can just walk down the street and walk through bridges and break buildings and stuff. It does feel like you're enormous. You're lumbering. You're this huge force, and then it has these incredibly large demons that you rock 'em sock 'em robot with. So you're not just Doom guy bigger. It really introduces a completely different way of playing the game in those sequences, which it also does with the dragon. I did not like the dragon at all. I did not think it was very fun. I didn't think it was well executed. It's cool to soar, you know, around these big environments, and you know, it has you doing some chase sequences that are kind of neat. But mostly what you were doing, unless it's changed in the latter half, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. But mostly what you're doing is like just sitting in one spot, dodging things and shooting at turrets.
And I think it's the same thing you're doing as the mech. I mean, it's you sit there, you wait for a perfect dodge, and then you hit your thing. I mean, I think they're
but
both.
But the difference is I that makes sense if I'm a giant boxer, right? If I'm a giant lumbering, slow moving boxer. It does not make sense if I'm a agile winged dragon that can soar at incredible speeds through the sky. You literally like it locks you into this position, and you
strafe mode or whatever.
Yeah, and then you wait as these things shoot at you, and then you dodge, and then that if you dodge it, you know, close enough to when it went by you, it clicks into this other mode where you can shoot even more powerful beams, and you need to do that in order to do certain things. It's like none of this is fun, and none of it sells the dragon fantasy. I mean, it's cool that you are getting off the dragon and getting back on the dragon. That's cool. But every time I finished my off the dragon part, I was like, I have to get back on the dragon. I don't want to.
I don't want to. I agree. I think that those are kind of the weakest parts of the game, but I don't want to overly belabor it, because I'm pretty sure through the first half of the game, you only do each once.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and through the back half, it's not.
But it's not
much
short.
More than that.
It's not. They're not short sequences. The dragon one in particular is very extended. You do it. You get off and get back on that dragon. I don't know, 5-6 times. It's a lot.
Guys, if there's one thing I've learned in life, it's don't chase the dragon.
Don't chase the dragon. Yeah.
Listen to or Will. The waterfalls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That said, yeah, you're right. It's a relatively minor amount of the game, and the game itself is like, let's underscore, it is so fun. It is so fun. It is gory. It is violent. It's crazy. It's a sensory onslaught that you're getting, but it is really fun. And you're bashing stuff and leaping and catapulting yourself at, you know, enemies, and just like you said, Christian, you have such a arsenal to choose from at any given time. And yes, some things work better in certain instances, but it's awesome that you can pretty much do it with anything. You can take down anything with anything. There's stuff that works a little bit better for certain scenarios, but you know, you are this unstoppable force that, you know, that always has to move forward in order to, yes, it constrains you with power-ups. It's absurd how many different kinds of power-ups are just littered on a battlefield at any given time. You know, you have,
it's a video game-ass video game. I love it, you know?
Definitely so. It is, you know, you've got different ammo types for the different weapons. So there's all these different ammo types potentially. You've got a melee. You have a certain number of melee attacks that you need to actually
have. You
have
to pick up melee ammo. You have to have ammo for your punch.
No sense at all.
No, just a video game.
Just a video game. You have health. You have armor. You know, you have gold potentially. There's like so many things that could just be littered out. And they don't just, you know, throw one or two here. You have shards of ammo. You have little teeny bits of health. So we're going to give you them in two increments, you know, even so it'll be just the numbers everywhere.
It's the numbers flying off of enemies feeling without needing to show me numbers. You're constantly getting that like bing, bing, feedback. bing, you know, it's so fun. And I think it does the thing, my last kind of point that I want to hit on it, Jeff, is that it continues the thing that 2016 did really well of introducing this big ass enemy and you being like, whew, got through that battle. And then it's like, great, here's the next level, idiot. Here's eight of them. Go.
Right. You know? Oh, yeah. The boss of the last level is going to show up in groups of three in the next level. Yeah.
By the end, it's part of the mob. Have fun. Go eat.
That's right. Yeah. And you constantly feel like, it's over, you're OP over and over and over. Each new weapon you get, you're like, well, now I'm unstoppable. And you are for a short period of time. And then you need another weapon and they give you another one. And you're like, ah, this is the coolest thing ever. I got a mace now? Come on. It's
wild to give you a rocket launcher and you're like, did it. And then they're like, you're going to want something bigger than a rocket launcher.
Yeah. But you're right, those other sort of detours away from the formula. But, you know, it's so much of the same thing. You know, these are games that used to be 8 hours and, as you said, now are 20 hours. So I do think it's fun to sort of have a little bit of a detour into some other things. But, you know, they're not as great as that core gameplay loop, which is nailed. I will say, I don't know if you've experienced what I was talking about, but I do think – this game is almost fatiguing in its level of intensity, you know, like it's a lot.
Yeah, I hear you. I guess for me, it's such a, it relaxes that so much from Eternal. That Eternal, I think, was too much of that because of all the mobility and keeping track of how to do X, Y, or Z that I found Doom the Dark Ages to be. It's more focused than that. It's a lot in terms of you have to let your fingers go into that symphony state, you know, that flow state. But yeah. I was never lost for what to do or how to do it when I would dive back in.
I wasn't ever lost for what to do. I just was like, my nervous system is not capable of doing this. Okay, now I'm back in, like you said, like ramping into that flow state. And you really do have to be, because there would be a, you know, I'd be like, oh, I need to stop for a meal or whatever.
Yeah, the game's answer would be like, no, you don't.
Yeah, don't. What if you don't, though?
What if you just shield bashed forward through that meal, Jeff? Yeah. What if that's what you did?
And then I would get back on, and I'd be like, man, I just died like three times on a sequence that I was crushing, you know, 20 minutes ago. And it's like, yeah, that's right, because your brain hasn't caught back up to the level of processing you need.
Check your blood sugar, man. See how you go.
That's right. You're crashing after lunch. This is not a post-lunch game. The other thing that points to for me is that it's a game that really benefits from you having a high frame rate. You know, we're fortunate to have fortunate to have really high frame rates from our and the frame generation that the 50 series gives you too, because you know this is not a game. This is a game where you're flinging your view around. There's guys coming at you. You're dodging stuff constantly. You're flinging yourself through things. It really is information processing at a high rate. So you know, having a high frame rate on your PC is key. We haven't played this on any console, so I don't know what the frame rates are like there, but I would assume they're locked at 30.
I think Digital Foundry put out a thing. I think they tried to hit a 60, a consistent 60.
Oh, that would be worth it for this game. It's a game, like I said, you're going to want a high frame rate because, you know, you're just in it. You're in it constantly.
Yeah.
But huge thumbs up from both of us. This is another game that could easily make my top five and could easily be a Game of the Year candidate in just a sea of nonstop Game of the Year candidates.
It's almost like we're the Doomslayer and all of the Game of the Year candidates are all of the enemies. And thankfully, they're shooting some green orbs at us. So we're able to
That's right.
Volley them back. Also, wonderful accessibility settings and wonderful difficulty settings. A lot of you can set your difficulty to be, you know, I found this is one game where I found the default difficulty to be a little easier than I kind of wanted it to be. And instead of switching it to just a harder difficulty, I could go in and just make enemy health a little harder, a little more to take down. So you can change game speed. It's really, really cool.
In a series that's famous for its difficulty settings, and it still has those, right? It still has Hurt Me Plenty and Bring It On and all the like classic Doom sort of, you know, meta scale difficulty settings. But you're right, it's awesome that they went in and also added those granular tweaks that you can do to kind of dial it in exactly how you want. I think that's very, very smart. Very, very smart. All right, so that's Doom the Dark Ages. I hope we made you want it even more, Will, because it's very good.
I mean, it looks amazing. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it along with the rest of us plebeians this week.
All right, so what is on your speaking of Game of the Year candidates, what is on your playlist?
So I'm going to try and just bash through a few things that I know you guys have covered in past episodes, but I think are worth mentioning. Expedition 33, or I guess Clara Obscura Expedition 33.
Yes.
Just incredible. I think it's just, you guys talked about it at length last week. I just wanted to add, like, it's so wild that this game actually exists.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I knew that it was in development or that it was ever coming out like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. It's just one of those like incredible drops where someone just, you know, it's like, hey, I made a game. Here it is. Guess what? It's a Game of the Year contender. It's absolutely mad. I've seen zero marketing for it. I don't get ads for it on YouTube or TikTok, which is an insane way to launch an original IP. It just feels like they've launched this whole thing off the back of word of mouth.
And 2 million,
which is crushing,
2 million sales so far. So, you know, it's doing really well. And that's on top of a game that's also available on Game Pass. So, you know, it's doing great.
I'm really enjoying it. It's a really original setting. It's a great situation. The sort of hybrid turn-based but sort of pseudo real-time mechanics I'm really loving. In a weird way, and it's particularly weird because they're both French, it's kind of what I want Assassin's Creed to be.
Interesting. It's Why do you say that?
It's like, give me a historical setting and give me interesting combat and a variety of characters and an interesting sort of end game to progress well to. And I feel like Assassin's Creed has just sort of gone off on a complete bender over the last few years and just picked random setting. And you're like, what on earth are we doing here? I feel like Expedition 33 really places you in a world in a way that Assassin's Creed really wishes it does.
So my question to you as a European is, would you describe it as so French?
I mean, it is incredibly French. And I have to say that I don't want to put any spoilers into the chat, but between this and the last arc of Andor, it feels just like peak French resistance time, right? For French resistance code in media right now. I love the fact that as a hardened Steam Deck gamer, I love the fact that it looks and plays great on Steam Deck.
Mm.
Because the idea of just taking this insane open world, you know, brilliant adventure, and just sitting with it like in bed is frankly brilliant. It's you guys talked a lot about Expedition 33. It's fantastic, and it really does live up to the hype.
Yeah, I agree. It is it's gorgeous. It's beautifully written, beautifully performed, and the combat is so fun. Yeah, it's going to be a hard thing at the end. We're only in May, ladies and gentlemen, and we got like I think I have 12 games on my list that can easily be my game of the year. Certainly could make my top five. It's wild how strong the first half of 2025 has been.
And we have a console launch happening in less than a month. Like, nuts. That's so weird about Nintendo too, with the kind of rhythm it's created. It's like, oh, here we are in the middle. We're getting all these, you know, consoles are hitting their stride. We're in the middle of the generation. Oh, just kidding. Here's a new one. And it's going to bring its own amazing experiences to it.
And not only that, but as you guys mentioned, you know, the lack of Grand Theft Auto 6 at the end of the year means we're probably going to have some big drops at the end of the year coming too. So this could just be a banner year for gaming, as the last several have all been too.
So I've been loving Expedition 33. On the other end of the indie games that you didn't know existed but just sort of suddenly dropped to critical acclaim, I got really stuck into Blueprints.
Mm. Yes.
Which you guys have talked about. And I have to say, bounced off that really hard.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
No spoilers, but you start the game with a quest. Mm-hmm. And the initial sort of 7 to 8 hours it takes you to complete the quest are like, this is interesting. It's sort of deck building compared with roguelite. Contrasted with, you know, there's some intricacy to how you manage the way you build out your deck as you go, and you kind of go, okay, I can kind of see how this goes. And within a few, you know, within the first phase of the game, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours, you've completed the quest that you thought you were there to complete, and then suddenly there is a huge, you realize that's the tip of the iceberg, and there is suddenly a whole bunch more game. In the case of the game, literally underground or underwater, that you can go and sort of play in. And I have to say, it really felt like a sort of complete bait and switch. It was like, here's one game and you're turning it into another. It went from an interesting and kind of fun, I can pick up and play a run kind of puzzle game, to, oh my God, I'm in an all-encompassing world that's going to demand 100 hours out of me on a frankly quite flimsy story that seems like an allegory for Western democracy that sort of feels like it was written by a democracy undergrad at some 2-bit university where it's like, oh, there's a book about a blue prince and then a book about a red prince, and they've got different views as to how the world should be run. And it's like, sheesh kebab, I could just go and pick up Fox News and CNN and get more, like, a higher quality of political commentary. I don't really turn into my video games to get, 2-bit political views. So I just bounced off it so hard at that point. I was like, "There's, I'm sure there are lots of intricate and interesting puzzles, but your storyline has just completely lost me."
Interesting. That somewhere Lana Bashinsky is applauding, because she expressed a similar frustration with the game, that it's like, oh, we've turned into a place that I feel insulted.
I think like she hit that at 150 hours in or something like that.
No, I think she got there pretty quickly as well. But
I think she's played a lot of it. We'll have to ask Wednesday. Well,
Lana, she doesn't stop. If she doesn't like something, she doesn't stop.
That's why she still does paid DLC.
That's right. That's why she works so well with us, Christian. Because, she will suffer.
She wakes up and she's like,
that's
freaking
right.
Hate Wednesday.
Why am
here
I still doing
DLC?
This?
DLC.
Get over. I got my own two princes I have to worry about.
So the first 10 hours of Blueprints, I was like, this is a great, fun deck building puzzle game. And after that, I was like, this is too up its own booty for me to care. things that I have really enjoyed are not very au courant, but are new to me. So I've really gone into Split Fiction.
Yes.
Which is not the world's most exciting or wild game, but it does exactly what it says on the tin. So I am going through a life stage where my partner has just moved in with me after many years of bachelordom.
Congratulations.
I'm trying to be accommodating about the video gaming experience. And we started watching Split Fiction, and it's like, this is a game that is so coded for men to play with their wives who don't really play video games. It's like, here's a video game that's about books. you couldn't make it any more sort of female. And it's about like fantasy and sci-fi books, which again just very much feels in the zeitgeist. So we start, you know, we've done sort of, you know, we've moved in, we've done a game of two halves. I've started crocheting. I'm terrible at crocheting, but she started playing video games. We started playing Split Fiction, and honestly, it is brilliant. As a seasoned video gamer, there is nothing that's going to give you any trouble whatsoever. It's like, here's a grappling hook mechanic. Here's a jump from platform to platform mechanic. Oh, it's a little bit sci-fi. Oh, it's a little bit medieval, whatever. Space versus old, whatever you prefer. It's got a bit of both.
Both, yeah.
And I can just bash my way through it sort of slightly with my eyes closed. But for her, it's a really interesting challenge and narratively interesting. And I just think, man, has ever a video game just nailed its target demographic quite as hard as Split Fiction? If you think about most sort of like couch games that you play together, it's like Mario Kart, which is just going to end in fights. It's Street Fighter, which is a fight, which is going to end in fights. Split Fiction feels like it's just a great setting. And it's perfectly pitched for what it is.
I love
and
that.
I'll
push back slightly in that I played it with my 8-year-old, and there was a number of times where I'm like, buddy, I just need you to make this jump. That's all I need you to do. I just need you to make the jump, and then we can move forward. Come on. It's the thing that you got to push the button. Can you please just walk over? He's like, but dad, look, can we get over here up the tree? No, the game is clearly telling you we can't go that way, and then you need to go this way. And I can't go this way unless you also go this way. So,
well, thankfully, my partner isn't 8 years old, so I'm doing a little bit better on that
Fair
front.
Enough.
But I
Fair
have
point.
To say, it's like, in terms of games you can play with your partner on the couch, it is infinitely less likely to lead to incredibly heated arguments than Overcooked, which I've discovered to my... If you've played Overcooked with a partner... that leads to conflict very, very quickly.
Well, that's the whole point of that game. yeah, we're going to make you very frustrated with the people you're supposed to be having fun with. Yes,
correct.
Yeah.
For my own little bit of balance, I've had a little bit of spare time recently, and I thought I'm going to go back and revisit games that I really feel like I should have played and haven't played.
Okay.
And to that end, I got stuck into Yakuza 0.
Oh, what do you think of it?
That game is a lot of cutscenes. Like, there is a stereotype of sort of like, you know, Japanese originated games where, you know, you spend more time watching a cutscene than you spend playing the game. I mean, I think I must have literally spent 35 minutes without touching a button, apart from just skip, 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 skip forward. Hmm. I mean, it's brilliant. It's totally mad. It's totally mental. The mini games of doing karaoke or running a bar or doing, you know, it's a lot of fun. I have to say, it's also a real throwback to an earlier time of gaming. I think I put about 4 hours in one sitting into the game on PS5, the sort of PS5 vaguely remastered version. Turned off my PS5 and then came back to find there is no saved game.
Ooh,
because
ouch.
I did not actively save game within the game itself. And you go, Oh my God. Yes, of course. There was a time in the tens where you had to manually save a game.
Right.
And the only saving grace was that I'm pretty sure the first, you know, I played 5 hours. I'm pretty sure the first 3 hours was just cutscenes, so I could just turn it on and walk away for 3 hours and come back to it. And I could sort of pick up my progress and then learn very quickly how to do a save game. It's great. It's sort of, I mean, it was GTA before GTA almost, right? And it's an incredible bit of a nostalgic retro game that still holds up.
Do you appreciate the humor in it? Is it fun to, I know, one of the things people always comment on is how silly and fun it can be.
Still very funny. I mean, in 2025, some of the jokes hit a little bit different, but if you can get over that, it's a great game. It's a lot of fun. It's a real throwback to how, you know, it feels very Shenmue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which I appreciate for its own reasons. So that's been a great introduction to my playlist. And then the game that I really want to shout out, which is a total sort of sideways turn from everything else, is I have become completely addicted to an iOS game. I know it's not desktop, laptop, or console. It is desktop, laptop, console, and mobile, called Prado Traveler or Prado Traveler. I'm not okay. quite sure. Prado Traveler. And it is an incredible mobile RPG. It starts out like any other RPG. You can pick like warrior, thief, rogue, mage, whatever. You start out in a little town. You've got two types of quests. You can do gathering quests, which let you go and get resources. Adventuring quests, which let you go and, you know, battle monsters. Every time you battle monsters, you level up. Every time you gather things, you gather ingredients or herbs or food that you can then take back to the town center that you're currently in, brew into potions or food or any of these kind of things. And you go, well, that all sounds like super generic, if not basic RPG. And here's the catch. In order to complete a quest, every quest has a certain number of physical steps you have to do to be able to complete it. So, you know, you start off and you go, right, I want to go and gather, you know, some herbs and some fruit and some things, all these things I want to cook in my kitchen. Great. That'll be 4,000 steps you have to do. So I have to physically walk out my door and do 4,000 steps before I can come back and complete the quest. It's a great idea. And you have to go and physically go and do something to level up your character every time. Each quest is 4,000, 6,000 steps. As they get harder, you get a 10,000 step quest that then goes straight into another 10,000 step quest. And I would say since I started playing this game in January, so it gives you your stats every week, my average steps per day has gone up from about 5,500 to 10,500. Because every day I go, you know what? I could take an Uber to this place that I'm going to. I could drive to this place I'm going to. Or I could just spend an extra half an hour and walk and level up my character and get a new spell and get a new... It's absolutely incredible. And it's a completely free-to-play game. You can subscribe in order to get some cosmetics. But it is really the most addictive thing I have played this year. And we normally think of addiction as a pretty bad thing, but I'm now addicted to walking out my front door and getting 10,000 steps in a day.
That's so awesome. I love the idea of being addicted to a game that actually it can benefit. I mean, this is the ultimate geeks and sneaks game, right? It's gamifying some motivation to get out there and exercise, get yourself moving. Just
it
amazing.
Is, and the thing is, it doesn't put it too much in your face. It's not like, hey, go out there and exercise because it's good for you. It's like, it's such a good game in its own right. And the different locations that you travel between, you know, to travel from one location to another, you physically have to walk the number of steps that takes you from one location to another.
That's awesome.
But then when you get there, you've got like a whole new set of monsters, a whole new set of shops, a whole new set of things to craft. I would say I'm probably, it resets every 3 months. So you get new seasons, so new locations, new things to do. They just added subclassing, so you can be a warrior thief or a mage rogue or whatever. It is genuinely on its own terms a great game. But the fact that you have to go and do something physically to continue leveling up is just great fun. And it's, I've tried many things to try and pick up the exercise habit post COVID. And this is the one thing that's really stuck for me, because God damn if I'm not going to beat that Goblin King at level 14. That guy is right. Going down. If I have to walk 10 miles to do it.
How do you beat the Goblin King? You just walk away. You just walk. Walk. Again, this game is called Prado Traveler, Prado Traveler. It's a mobile game that I might have to pick this
and
up.
And it's free on the App Store, man. It's unbelievable. Awesome.
Does it have any kind of, free to play kind of hooks?
So there's nothing that you need. If you pay there's like a $9.99 a month subscription that just gets you some nice cosmetic, you can get a cloak that nobody else can get, but there's nothing that, there's no upgrade. Okay. So it's really just, I have to say, they only just introduced that. I've been playing it for 4 months, paying absolutely nothing, and I felt quite guilty. So it's just two dudes in Europe that develop it. And, if I can give them $10 a month, that's whatever, like half that's a great. Cent per step that I'm notching up as I go around.
Well, so that's what I was, like, I was worried that there's going to be some sort of microtransaction where it's like, pay us $9.99 and you can walk half as many steps.
No, believe me, there are some days where I've been really hungover and I would kill for that functionality, but I've still got to get out and walk to the park. God damn it.
I love it. Prado Traveler. All right. I have another game to talk about on my playlist, but we're going to take a final break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with that right after this. All right. The final game I want to talk about is yet another Game Pass release that I have been looking forward to. I think Journey to the Savage Planet is one of those woefully underrated games that people don't talk about. Nobody I've heard recommends Journey to the Savage Planet. It's a game I really have a soft spot for in my heart. I really enjoyed that game. First person, kind of wacky. It has what I would describe as like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy mentality. It's this sci-fi, but in a goofy, satirical look at space travel and the future. And, it's a lot of really funny subversive jokes. Revenge of the Savage Planet is the newest entry into that, what I guess is a nascent franchise now. And I'm glad Savage Planet has become a multi iterative franchise, because I really enjoy it. I like the humor. I like the setting. I like it marries this very kind of cartoonish visual style with live action, FMV of throwback cutscenes. There's commercials and stuff, in-world commercials, and there's you work for this kind of creepy intergalactic company that mistreats its employees, but does so with a smile and a wink. And it's all done with, real live actors, and you're watching them on TV and in game. And I don't know, it works. The production value on that stuff is all very fun. It feels very Zaphod Beeblebrox, it feels very Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And Revenge of the Savage Planet takes what was a first person shooter and makes it a third person shooter, adds co-op play, which I haven't tried yet, but I think would be a blast in this game, and dumps you on new planets that you're running around collecting resources, trying to find, you've crash landed. So you're all the stuff that you need is scattered wildly around this untamed, alien world. And you have to destroy animals and get their carbon. You have to watch out for certain things and avoid lots of goop. This is a very goopy game. Things don't just die. They pop. they explode. They shoot lots of gunky gunk into the air and can get on you. You're slip sliding. You know that they'll leave a smear of ooze when you pop an alien, and you'll if you walk on it, you kind of do this old cartoony like yip, 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 you know the like legs scooting on the slippery surface. So it's got that kind of aesthetic to it, but it's fun. And then you get this, you know, very early on, you get this this water gun, this hose that lets you rinse off that kind of goop from stuff. And, you know, it has sort of elements of Power Wash Simulator kind of grafted onto this game. But it's fun. There's lots of platforming. You are bouncing around. You have a jetpack that can shoot you up short distances. It sort of gives you a double jump, and you are trying to navigate this very vertical world or multiple worlds that you know, you're trying to get to thing. How am I going to get to that place? How am I going to find that thing? You know, you're cataloging the world. You're scanning things, and every time you scan something in Revenge of the Savage Planet, it gives you sometimes very useful information, but always a joke. You will always, so I'm scanning literally everything just to see the little goofy joke that they wrote for that scan, which is, I think, adds lots of wonderful flavor to the game. You can also, you get a laser whip early on that you can lasso creatures with. You know, you constantly are getting new gear that changes the way you traverse the world, that you can level up, that, you know, you're getting resources, that you go back to your little habitat, which, by the way, looks like a sort of space Winnebago straight out of Spaceballs. You're manufacturing things in your replicator. It's good fun, and I think will be even more fun in co-op for folks. You can do either split screen or over the internet co-op. And I just love that this game exists. This would be another game that I think, in another time, I would be saying everybody has to play this. If we were in, you know, some sort of moment where there weren't a billion things that are just must play game of the year candidates, this, I don't know if this is going to be on my top five, but this may be one of my diamonds in the rough games. It really, it's unfortunate just how many incredible things, even just on Game Pass alone, how many incredible things there are to put 1,000 hours into. This is a light, fun, good time that I think is very well designed, has tons of personality, isn't really like other things that are out right now. You know, it's kind of got a teeny little bit of Zelda to it, a teeny little bit of Mario to it. It's, you know, it's very cartoonish in the best possible way. Great platforming, fun creature designs. For example, there are these little like raccoon head things that you meet very early on in the game that you can shoot with your little blaster, and they pop, and then their eyeballs fall off, and their eyeballs roll around with physics in the world. So they have these like goofy little cartoony eyeballs that are these bulbous little things that just roll, and you can walk over to them and step on them and they'll pop. You know, it just got so much personality. And then those things can also get goop on them, which makes them harder to see in the environment. So the goop is green and the fauna is green. So, or flora is green. So, you know, they'll sort of camouflage because they got goop on them. There's lots of really wonderful flourishes to Revenge of the Savage Planet. And I hope it's a game that people try out, especially if you're on Game Pass, because it's a diamond in the rough. It's a game that's not going to get a lot of buzz, I don't think, but is tons of fun. And I've already put more time into it than I thought I would. And I would love to play it in co-op as well. So it's a fun one. It's a great one. And we're just like drowning in.
But there's, and it's a Game Pass game?
It's a Game Pass game. Yep.
Sheesh kebab.
Day one Game Pass game. Revenge of the Savage Planet. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Will Harris, it's always so much fun chatting with you. Thank you for being with us again.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. I love nothing more than getting to chop it up with you guys and, you know, indulge my love of explaining to you the things that you discussed in previous weeks, because I'm a couple of weeks behind. Well, but thanks very much for having me. And if anyone wants to follow me, I'm in a little mini bet with one of my friends as to who can reach 1,500 Instagram followers quickly. The nice. Quickest. I know that's a very small number to such internet celebrities as yourself, but you can follow me at instagram.com/Will_Harris2R's.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, folks can read my review, spoiler-free review of Doom the Dark Ages, if they'd like, at christianspicer.substack.com. I'm still working on the next version of that newsletter as well. So folks will find that there when it is ready. Originally, it was going to be Let's Chat Games 22, and now it's 23 because Doom the Dark Ages review became number 22. I'm also still playing with video essays over there, so that's where people can find those. Again, it's christianspicer.substack.com. And then for more smaller or immediate, I guess when they happen, postings or musings, you can find both this show as DLC Hype Train and myself as Christian Spicer over on Blue Sky, if you'd like. Jeff, how's your podcast empire going? How's your movies? Man, talk about too many games. The summer is in full swing, they tell me.
It's already happening. We have 1 week here between when Thunderbolts hit and the deluge of nonstop summer releases. One little weird week where there really wasn't anything coming out. And so we are reviewing on the Filmcast a movie called Fight or Flight, which may very well be a fun review.
Because you might not know this, but Josh Hartnett's in it.
He is. We're in the full Hartnessance right now. And I welcome it. I think that guy is very talented individual. This movie, maybe not so much, but we'll see. We'll talk about it on the show. Also, you can find me on We Have Concerns, which is a comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. The biggest thing I want to talk about, of course, is runjeffrun.com, which is this fundraiser I'm doing to try to raise money for Providence Cancer Institute. Running 200 miles in a relay with a team of dudes, and we're donating all the money we raise to Providence Cancer Institute, every single penny of it. So, please support my nonsense, this 36-hour nonstop no sleep experience that I do in Portland, Oregon every year. It really means a lot to me to be able to significantly help this cause, support this cause. You can any amount is not too small. RunJeffRun.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Will Harris, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. So, Jeff, I know you've been on a little bit of a quest in the past year or so to try and catch up on sort of some of the classic anime that you might have missed over the years.
Indeed.
I've been doing the same. And without wanting to plug another podcast, which I know is bad form, there is a great podcast I've been listening to called Get Animated. And all they do is pick classic anime series from the last 20 years and go through them, maybe two episodes every sort of 45 minute episode of the podcast, and it's a great way of catching up on some of the classics. So I have been watching Gurren Lagann, which is on Netflix and is a fantastic anime. It's a group of humans who have been living underground for years because they believe that living above ground would mean immediate death. Of course, our protagonist decides that he's going to drill upwards and live over ground, discovers that the whole thing is obviously a complete hoax, and many mecha battles begin. Ooh. And it's a fantastic series. I'm really enjoying it. And watching it alongside with the little commentary from the Get Anime podcast is a great way to spend an hour every week. So my parting gift is Gurren Lagann on Netflix.
All right, that's GURRANLAGAN, Gurren Lagann on Netflix. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
as the world, I think, kind of zooms by us and time continues to move at a breakneck pace and incredible video games are just dumped on us a million at a time, I've been really trying to be intentional with my time and slow things down and focus on some work or some writing, or I often will listen to music while I read as well. And one way I've really enjoyed doing that, as antiquated as this might sound, is I recommend doing that thing that you are focusing on, cleaning, a thing that you want to set aside some time for, whatever it may be, and do it set to an album. Yes, an album, not just a playlist, not a random string of songs you've put together or that the algorithm feeds you, an actual album of music, and designate that time as your time you're going to catch up on reading your comic books, that you're going to focus on writing your poetry, whatever that thing that you're pursuing. I've really enjoyed the intentionality of it. And to further make this, old-timey, I'd recommend doing that to a vinyl record if you have it available. I think there is something beautiful about the designated segment of time for how long the front of the vinyl plays, to then taking it over, switching it, turning it over, starting the next side, and then that being your complete moment. I really love having defined moments in time, especially where there are constantly a million demands on our time at all times. And so I'd recommend slowing down, taking a break, and focusing, in the way I have done that, is with a vinyl record to be my clock for the thing I'm about to do.
Very cool. Very cool. I like that.
I love that. And as a bonus little parting gift, can I just say that I have only just discovered, thanks to your prompting, Christian, that there is a vinyl collection of the soundtrack to Hotline Miami, which is one of my absolute favorite games of the past couple of years, and it's fantastic electronica. And I listen to it a lot on Spotify to get work done, and thanks to your inspiration, I am going to go and get the vinyl and put that on.
Yeah, I bet that's a great way. I mean, I'm sure it's probably what, like a four record set or something like that. But
exactly,
yes, something about the find a moment of time, like this is all you have. I love. And Hotline Miami, what a great soundtrack.
My parting gift is a new television series that has hit Netflix. It's called Four Seasons. It's based on the 1981 Alan Alda movie that he wrote and directed and starred in with Carol Burnett. This one has our versions of Alan Alda and Carol Burnett, being Steve Carell and her name just left my head. 30 Rock.
Tina Fey?
Tina Fey.
Tina Fey.
Tina Fey. Tina Fey is our Carol Burnett, I think, in a way. Also has Will Forte and a lot of other really phenomenal actors. It's about three couples and their different vacations they take together. And they're just delightful people that you want to hang out with. And then stuff happens, you know, that, is dramatic, but very fun. And it's wild to take a movie that was, you know, whatever, hour and 45 minutes long and turn it into a television series that's 8 episodes long. Very funny, very fun, half hour episodes. Highly recommend this one. We just started it last night, my wife and I, but we already got through 4 episodes, half of it. It's called Four Seasons. It's on Netflix. I highly recommend it. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Martin, who says, as a parting gift, I'd like to recommend the British comedy Fresh Meat. As most great English comedies, it is irreverent, self-deprecating, and quite often embarrassing. It's a comedy about students with well-written, believable characters with interesting foibles, quirks, and idiosyncrasies. Why can't I say words? Imagine The Office, but about university students with a dash of the absurd. That should give you some idea. It also does touch on issues of class, social movements, and politics, but it's never heavy-handed or overbearing. I picked this one because you're here, Will. Have you heard of Fresh Meat?
I have. It is a great show. It's got some alumni from The Inbetweeners, if you've ever come across The Inbetweeners.
Love that.
It's very typical of that sort of like mid-noughties, tens British comedy that was very much inspired by The Office, but took a slightly raunchier view of things. It's a great watch.
I've never heard the Naughties. I like that. I like that as a way to talk about the early 2000s. That's a good. If you'd like to have your parting, well, thank you to Martin for sending that in. But if you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, please do send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Will Harris and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. Of course, you can get merchandise for our show by going to our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our biggest thanks always are reserved for our patrons at patreon.com/dlcpod. If you'd like to become one of them, we would love to welcome you into the flock. Patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show, making it possible. We appreciate you. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.